Thomas, the Euro Stephon Smith. Isaiah Thomas going against a seven-footer. Thomas, lob it up. Horford off the delivery by Isaiah Thomas. Horford the throwdown. And the Celtics are storming back. Tracked down by Horford. Isaiah Thomas, it's a three. Thomas, it's a three. Isaiah Thomas loves that corner. Wall got picked. Thomas to the hoop. It's good and a foul. Gets a step on Wall. Morris there to greet him. Thomas with the flip. Isaiah Thomas, 46 points. Isaiah Thomas to the hole. Isaiah Thomas is a machine. Thomas crosses. Foul called and one. Thomas, it goes. Caps off a remarkable night for Isaiah Thomas. 53 points, and Boston has run away with it.
Yesterday was a long 6 hours. Even today, I had to go back about 4 to 5 hours a day. And today, my mouth was swollen this morning. I had to go back to the hospital just to get a few meds to get the swelling down because I could barely talk. I know once game time came, my guys would get me going and give me the energy to go out there and try to win a game. It was a team effort tonight because there was times where you would think the game would be over, and they had the momentum, but we kept going. Today is my sister's birthday. She would have been 23 today, so the least I can do is go out there and play for her.
In the air, left field. Brantley going back to the track, to the wall. It is gone. A two-run shot for Miguel Cabrera, fresh off the disabled list, and the Tigers add to their lead.
Miguel Cabrera is amazing. Look at Miguel pull his hands inside in front of his body. I mean, that's freaky kind of stuff right there.
It's the 2-2. Popped him up. Who wants it? Castellanos. And the Tigers win the first two.
Feel different when you end the year. I mean, I'm glad I'm back. Hopefully can stay healthy the rest of the season. I'm trying to help the team to win more games.
I mean, it's a good win. Any win against a division rival, especially these guys who beat up on us pretty good last year, you know, it feels good. After the game, it feels good. But we all know, you know, it's a long way. And you know, we got to turn the page quickly and come back tomorrow ready to win.
Go ahead. Hit me. No, don't let the keep lingering around and, you know, keep trying to hit people. I mean, it's MLB should do something about hitting pitchers out there with balls in their hands, throwing 100 miles per hour, trying to hit people. I got a bat, too. I could go up there and crush somebody if I wanted to. But you know what? I'll get suspended for the year, and the pitchers only get suspended for 2 games. That's not cool. I mean, that's not my call. I mean, I play baseball. That's all I can control. So, you know, so they got to do something about it. You're going to hit somebody, go ahead, hit them. I don't know. I mean, go ask them. Go ask for. Well, actually, that side on the other side. I don't know. I mean, for me, as I see it, is that I slid into second base normal, and then I, you know, kind of hurt someone a little bit, you know, unintentional. I grabbed them after the matter of fact, and you know, they're still trying to pay the piper. I don't know what they're trying to pay for. I don't know what their mindset is. So whatever. I'm just gonna keep playing baseball, doing what I gotta do, keep winning games out here, keep playing for my team, and that's all I can control.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And a good Wednesday afternoon. Welcome into this edition of the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jim Kushlin and Frank Gargano, we're going to hang out with you for the next couple hours. Bob, a little bit on assignment for today. Lots and lots of fun stuff that we're going to talk about over the course of the next 2 hours. You heard a good chunk of it right there. Isaiah Thomas and his 53 points. Celtics lead that series 2-1. And then you heard some of his comments after the game. I want to talk about that series and what Thomas has been doing, having to go through. We'll have time for phone calls on that and more at 866-240-1065. Speaking of NBA, Cavs back in action. Game 2 a little bit later tonight from the queue against the Raptors. Cavs lead 1-0. We'll talk with Dave Zabak of FearTheSword.com, SB Nation Cavs site at about 4:35 for a little update and preview of that one. We'll also have that one for you here on the Ticket. We'll join the coverage right at about tip-off time at 7 as soon as Mike Miller and Face Off the Hockey Show is completed. Go right to the game, and then when that game's over, we'll cap the entire evening off with extra innings with Bill Clark, our brand new weekday baseball show. That's a lot of fun for a call-in post-game kind of things. And baseball is where I'm going to start at, because here in just a couple of moments, we're also going to talk some Tigers. Matt Mowry of the Oakland Press He's at Comerica Park. Game 3 of 4 between the Indians and the Tigers tonight. Tigers have taken the first two, and they've taken 4 out of 5 from the Indians so far in 2017. That's just how it works in baseball. That's just how it works. Two, three, four years ago, the Tigers were whooping up on the Indians every time out. Then last year, as we know, the Indians went, what was it, 14-4 against the Tigers. Yeah, because there was one game that didn't get made up, that was supposed to be made up and didn't at the very end of the season. So they went 14-4, and now this year the Tigers are 4-1 so far, and it gets worse from an Indians point of view. Corey Kluber leaving with a kind of a stiff back thing, feels like he's day-to-day. Who knows, with the 10-day DL, I would not be surprised in the next 12 to 24 hours we find out Corey Kluber goes to the DL. So all things coming up Tigers. Miguel Cabrera came back for that one last night. And, of course, homered, because I, as an Indians fan, have been shuddering for years every time Miguel Cabrera steps up to the plate against Cleveland. He just does what he does. Kind of like how we were commenting the other day that the Indians, for whatever, have very good numbers against Justin Verlander. And then the tail end, we're really going to go into some of that with the baseball kind of rules. There's a lot of Red Sox-Orioles stories going on. I'm not going to talk as much about the Adam Jones one, but over the course of the show today, if you got more thoughts on that, that's fine, too. I want to go into what Manny Machado, though, is yelling about in that that last clip you heard of the montage, which had more bleeps, I think, than actual words. But joining us right now from Comerica Park, he's a Tigers writer for the Oakland Press. Game 3 of 4 between the Indians and the Tigers tonight. The series will conclude tomorrow afternoon. Matt Mowry of the Oakland Press joins us once again here on the ticket. Good afternoon, Matt. How you doing?
Not bad. How you doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad. And right now the Tigers not doing too bad. And let me just start there. It's 4 out of 5 so far. 2 more to go in this series. That's just one of those things in baseball. Just mentioning a minute ago that, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago it was the Tigers constantly whooping up on the Indians. Indians returned the favor last year. A new calendar year, a new season, and it's Tigers 4-1 so far about the against the Indians. Even though a lot of both rosters are kind of the same as they were when season ended. That's just how it is in baseball, isn't it?
Yeah, and the response from the Tigers so far is they nod when you say that they've matched last year's season win total against the Indians with 4 wins. They nod and acknowledge the fact that you've said that, but they keep saying a lot of games left to play, a lot of games left to play. And it is. I mean, realistically, you know, the Indians could take 11 in a row here. You just never know how that goes. It is baseball, and it is a weird game, and you know, sometimes one team will have another's number for an entire year, 2 years, 3 years, and then the worm will turn and it'll be the exact opposite for the next couple of years. It's just weird that way, especially because, like you said, these two teams are essentially the same as they were last year. So it's not like, you know, somebody new came in and gave a huge, you know, new wrinkle to the whole situation. It's essentially the same teams, but they've got such a history. I mean, you mentioned, you know, Mickey's kind of been an Indians killer over the last couple of years. Victor Martinez, when he's going right, has been an Indians killer. You know, JD Martinez, even though he's not here right now, has been an Indians killer, and it's kind of been the same. You know, Carlos Santana has been a Justin Verlander killer, and you can go right down the list, and it kind of goes both ways. So you just never know which side's going to end up on top. And for the Tigers, it's been great for them to be able to get off to the start against the Indians. But, you know, like I said before, a lot of games left to play, and it's still real early this in the season to, you know, start counting chickens.
Oh, absolutely. No question about that. Still very early. The whole season series could, you know, even out as we keep going forward. That's absolutely true. Verlander, though, I'm encouraged about that from a Tigers standpoint, Matt, because, you know, Verlander, I was watching the Indians version of the broadcast last night, and they mentioned something that I didn't realize it was this stark, that the Indians have more wins against Verlander by a wide margin than anybody else in Major League Baseball. Only the Indians and White Sox, for Justin Verlander's career, have double-digit wins. Indians at 22, and the White Sox are at 13. So, and of course, just a couple weeks ago, in the one loss the Tigers suffered in Cleveland in their first series, that was Justin Verlander getting bounced around again. So I got to say, you're going to have that when you're also a division rival and you see each other so many times. But I got to say, that was a nice outing for Verlander, just considering the history as recent as a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it was a nice outing for him for a couple of reasons. Like you said, it's always nice to beat a team that historically has, you know, had you've had trouble with, and like you mentioned, the White Sox and the Indians, and obviously he's pitched against those teams more than almost any other, so it's logical to think that they would have the most cracks at him, but he really did, especially early in his career. He really struggled against the Indians, and you know, then for a couple of years when he was really on top of his game, you know, it kind of turned, and then the last couple of years it's been more of a struggle again. And he was really last night fighting command. He was not pinpoint with where he was throwing the ball. There was actually one of the strikeouts that he got where he either crossed up his catcher Alex Avila, or he just had no idea where it was going because Avila set up completely inside and then had to backhand the ball at the outside of the zone. But he still got a strikeout on it just because it hit the lower outside corner, and so he was really kind of fighting that. So for him to be able to fight through it in the cold, and it was chilly here. It was not frigid. It was not snowing, but it was still that 43 degrees, and for a while it was kind of drizzly. And so those are the times that he even mentioned after the game. It's one of those where after a couple innings you really can't feel your fingertips, so it's really hard to kind of get a true grip on the ball. So for him to fight through that last night and be able to go seven, because they've had so little luck in getting deep in games, partly because they're walking so many people, you know, partly because they've got some younger kids whose pitch counts get up early. For him to be able to go seven last night was astronomically huge for the Tigers, you know, for the bullpen and for, you know, just the rotation itself.
Yeah, and that's such a good point, Matt. We're talking with Matt Mowry. He writes for the Oakland Press, covers the Tigers. He's at Comerica Park as the Indians are getting ready to take on the Tigers, third of four games. I want to ask you something real quick, because you were mentioned how chilly it was last night, and there's absolutely no doubt about it. We're in this little cold spell. The calendar claims it's May, of course, but it feels more like March. We were having a fun debate on the program yesterday, how many people would actually be in attendance. I said it would be over 17,000. Now, the marked attendance for yesterday was 21,799. We know how baseball does those things. How many of those 21,000 were actually in the seats, though?
Oh, boy. Especially near the end of the night. Like I said, once it started to, you know, there was a little bit of precipitation, you could tell that people were like, okay, I got to go. I got to work in the morning. You know, by the end of the game, it was certainly well below 17. It was probably in the 12 range. But for the most part, at the beginning of the game, it was probably right around 17 or 18. I think that's a safe bet. But you're right. I don't think it was anywhere close to the 21,000 tickets sold.
Yeah, no, it never is, because they always count. And baseball teams have been doing this for years. They only count the tickets that get sold, not how many butts actually show up in the seats. But we had a fun debate about it, and it sure didn't look like 17 to 20,000, which was my guess for yesterday. We're talking with Matt Mowry, Oakland Press Tigers writer, joining us here on the Extravaganza. Jim Kuss and Frank Argano. We're in for Bob France here on this Wednesday edition. Obviously, more good news as along the way for the Tigers these last couple days. Miguel Cabrera off the 10-day DL. First of all, I love the fact that it's a 10-day DL, because, you know, even though I've read articles already, you know, during spring training in the first month where, watch out, managers might abuse it. The flip side of that, though, is something's wrong with the guy. Just shut him down for 10 days, because it's not as bad as the 15-day DL, because that was a rule change that baseball made. So kind of a two-part question for you, Matt. One, your thoughts on the fact that overall it's a 10-day DL. I'm still partially in my own head getting used to that. And two, Miguel Cabrera is back, and that obviously means good things as he does what he does best yesterday.
Sure, and we even talked about that with Brad Ausmus yesterday, how different it is in the decision-making process for a manager, because he said when Miggy first got hurt, they were looking at the conservative estimate was probably 5 days. Well, if you've got a 15-day DL, with 5 days, you're probably not going to put him on the DL. Well, then that kind of hamstrings you, because you've got a guy on the roster you really can't play, and now you're down a guy. And it really puts you in a bind as far as, you know, trying to manage the roster. And with it being, you know, a 5-day estimate, probably realistically around 6 or 7 was when he was ready to go, it was almost a no-brainer with it being a 10-day DL. And, you know, it was, especially with a starting pitcher, if you've got a starting pitcher who's got something that's relatively minor and you're thinking, okay, this might cost him a start, well, especially if you've got an off day in that 10-day span, well, you're not really even going to affect your rotation at that point. You can just basically slide everybody back, for the second time through, and you'll be fine. And so Austin said he would not be surprised if by the end of the season there's some kind of record set for how many people use the disabled list, and not necessarily abusing it, but just using it to their advantage and being able to take care of those little nagging ills, like, you know, like your Cabrera's groin, where, you know, like I said, he even said, I'm not sure we would have put him on the DL if this was still last year with the 15-day. Now, him coming back, obviously, it's a good thing. You know, like you said, he does what he does, and the lineup is different with him in the middle, because it just, everybody in front of him gets better pitches to hit, because realistically, a pitcher wants to get out of the inning before he ever comes to the plate. And you could see just from the first swing he took, I believe the first swing he took, he shot the ball, you know, to right field, and had it not been windy yesterday, that probably would have been out the opposite way. Second time he comes up, he takes a, I believe it was a 2-2 pitch, and deposits it in the bullpen the other way. And it just, you can tell that the lineup is different with him in it. Now, we're still under a little bit of a caution because it did tighten up on him in the cold last night. And so, just as a precaution, Brad Osmus got him out, especially with the big lead. There was no reason to leave him in there and let it stiffen up in the cold. So they got him out, and once he got warm, he said it felt better, but it was going to kind of be one of those where he was going to come in today, they were going to see how it felt, and they were going to go from there. Now, if there's any little twinge today, they'll probably end up, you know, keeping him out, but I actually haven't seen the lineup and seen if it's posted yet. I would assume they're still waiting to see how he feels. But it's one where they were going to be as cautious as possible. So, you know, it's conceivable that he could be out of the lineup tonight if that's not already out.
Yeah, and on that DL thing as well, you know, you're talking about, you know, it may not have done it last year, talking about Cabrera, and you mentioned, you know, if you have a starter. Incidentally, the visitors clubhouse right now, Cabrera Park, even I'm saying keep an eye on that in the next 12 to 24 hours. The Indians may very well do that for Corey Kluber for his stiff back that caused him to have to leave that game, among other things. He was getting knocked around pretty good as well. But I'm expecting the Indians, honestly, to do the same thing, because when you have the 10-day window as opposed to the 15, you know, you're able to do that. And I don't think it's, you know, necessarily quote-unquote abusing it. When I'm thinking of the articles I was reading over the course of spring training was, oh, guys will abuse it. Well, they have an off day coming up, and they're going to finagle their starting rotation to skip a guy and bring in a bullpen when nobody's really hurt. That might be counted as abusing it. What the Tigers did with Cabrera, what the Indians might be doing with Corey Kluber, because it's only 10 days, not 15, I don't consider that abusing it at all. I consider that being, you know, smart baseball decisions. You don't want to have that roster spot occupied for a couple days while you sort it out with a guy who just can't go. I think that'll work better, and I do agree with what you said, Osmus said. Yeah, I bet because of this, we're going to see record numbers of DL stints over the course of Major League Baseball this year. We're talking with Matt Mowry. He writes for the Oakland Press. He's at Comerica Park. Indians, Tigers getting ready for game three of their four-game series. Let's stay on the injury front. What is the latest on both Jacoby Jones and J.D. Martinez? I did read that Jacoby might be held out for another day or two and then get him back for the weekend. And I know it's still a process for J.D. Martinez trying to work his way back. What's the update on those two?
Well, Jacoby told us he was up here on Monday because the Mudhens had an off day. So he was just up here hanging out, you know, getting everything checked out. He told us that he would be back Thursday. Now, yesterday, Osmus told us that it probably would not be Thursday, the last game of the homestand here. It would probably more likely be the first day of the road trip. I think he said that Jacoby would play last night, tonight, and then tomorrow with the Mudhens, and then rejoin. Well, and then they would make a decision, and I don't know that it's a slam dunk that they've decided that he'll be ready to come back at that point. But at least that's when the first breaking point will be for when they'll make a decision on Jacoby. J.D. Martinez is a lot longer way off, as far as we can tell. Asked a couple questions about that of Brad yesterday, and it wasn't that he was upset or anything like that. I think he may be getting to the point where, you know, Jim Leland used to get sometimes with the injury questions, where he would just shut it down. He would get, you know, a little irked with the daily repetition of the questions, which, you know, we've kind of got to do to update just in case something happens. And Osmus's message yesterday was basically, once I know anything, I'll let you know. And J.D. the other day followed the ball off his other foot so that was a little sore. So I think that cost him a game, maybe Tuesday, I believe. So he still hasn't, as far as I know, played in the outfield. So he's a little longer off, certainly, than Jacoby is. It's not one that's, you know, imminent. I would highly doubt it would be this week. Next week might even be a stretch, because I think they really want him to get out there and check the comfort level of playing a full game. You know, and I'm sure they'll start him out gently and, you know, play him a couple innings in the outfield to start with, and then gradually increase that to see his tolerance level of, you know, whether or not there's any pain in that foot still. And once he can play a full nine-inning game and maybe do that a couple back-to-back times, you know, then they'll really be sure that he's ready to come back from the DL and contribute. And you know, since he hasn't yet started playing in the outfield, I would think that's probably still a little bit of a ways off.
Two more quick ones before I let you go. Thanks so much for the time and the insight. Matt Mowry of the Oakland Press joining us today. We're talking Tigers as they're getting ready for third of four games between the Indians at Comerica Park. He's at Comerica Park. I know Brad Ausmus and them will be speaking here maybe within the next half hour or so. One, since the last time we were able to talk to you, they made some more shakeups in terms of the bullpen. You know, Bruce Rondon down. Joe Jimenez has been up and down. Justin Wilson is now kind of solidified in that eighth inning spot. From your vantage point, from you, what you've been able to see since they made those changes a couple weeks ago now, how has it been affecting the bullpen? Because, quite frankly, I know a lot of Tigers fans are still, when that bullpen comes out, well, let's just say they get their nails trimmed.
Yeah, if you want to call it still a work in progress, it's still a work in progress, even though it's been a work in progress for about a decade. It's not one that they're necessarily going to have settled anytime soon, I don't think, simply because you've only really got a couple guys who are really pitching well, and those are the two Wilsons. K-Rod has been okay. He's been successful for the most part in save opportunities. There have been a couple of times he's coming in the ninth inning. Actually, one time he came in the eighth inning for an attempted four-out save, didn't go so well. You know, a couple of times he's coming in the ninth in a tie game, didn't go so well. With him, it was really, you know, the velocity was down early. It's back up now. He's starting to look a little better, but he's still, you know, with him, it's so much smoke and mirrors that he's got to deal with at this point in his career, because really, when, you know, we're talking about the quote unquote velocity being back, we're still talking 89-90. I mean, this is no longer the fireballer that we remember from his early days with the Angels. So, you know, it's so much with him is smoke and mirrors and deception and getting people to anticipate the wrong thing. And you can tell sometimes when somebody's sitting on one of his pitches, like I don't recall who it was in the last couple of days, was sitting on the changeup and got the changeup and drove it. So it's one of those where if he's not deceiving people, if he's not in their heads and, you know, getting them to go after the pitch he wants, then it's really not working as well for him. Like I said, he's been okay. The rest of the bullpen has just really been kind of a crapshoot. You never know what you're going to get with Shane Green. He's got electric stuff, but he can just never seem to find the plate. Bruce Rondon is still kind of a conundrum. He's been up and down. You know, we all know what kind of stuff he has when he's right and when he's going. I think the one that everybody kind of got a little bit of a reality check with Joe Jimenez. We all know what a prospect he is and what kind of stuff he has, but I think a lot of people were overestimating the impact he was going to be able to have immediately. He is still a very, very fine prospect, but you could see, and I don't remember which of his outings it was, you could see the reluctance to actually go to the secondary stuff. I think one of them he threw something like 10 straight fastballs just because he really wasn't as willing to go to the slider, even though, you know, it's a pretty good slider when he's got it going right. I think there's still a bit of a reluctance, either on his part or from the catcher standpoint, to call it. So, I mean, that's one of the things that they really want him to do, is they want him to go down to Toledo. And as Brad also said the other day, it's not a matter of him having to prove that he can either get AAA hitters out or even Major League hitters out, because I think he can get Major League hitters out right now. What it is they really want him to be ready to be a full-fledged Major League reliever. They don't want him just to be up here as an extra arm who can do some mop-up duty here and there, and you got to kind of coddle along and let him learn at the major league level. They want him to go down there to Toledo, and this is what they've said all along. They want him to really work on that secondary stuff So when he comes up and comes up to stay, that he's ready to be not necessarily just a, you know, run-of-the-mill guy in a bullpen. They really want him to have a chance to come up and stick. And that's really dependent on him being able to harness that secondary stuff and to have faith in throwing it and throwing it in really any count. And so that's another one that's still a work in progress. We could see him back within a couple of weeks. I don't know how long this process is going to take, or it could be, you know, a matter of him kind of shuttling back and forth a couple of times before he really gets that chance to stick. But I think they still have very high hopes, and I don't think anybody should be down on him. The Tigers certainly are not down on Joe Jimenez. They just know that he's not yet quite a finished product, and they would really like him to, you know, get a chance to come up and be the guy they think he could be.
Last one before I let you go, Matt. Thanks so much for taking the time. Matt Mowry, the Oakland Press Tigers writer, as the Tigers get ready to take on the Indians third game in four-game series at Comerica Park tonight. I'm of the belief, just looking at the Tigers' schedule, I know it's May and still early, there's lots left and all that stuff. I'm of the belief you want to make sure you win one of these two so you can take a second consecutive series from the Indians, because starting Friday, it's one of those, regardless of the opponents, these are always tricky, it seems, in baseball. 9-game, 10-day West Coast trip to Oakland, Arizona, and Anaheim. Would you agree with that kind of sentiment? You want to make sure you win three out of four in this series, keep the momentum going, then head out to the West Coast?
I certainly agree with that sentiment as far as, you know, leaving for the rest of the West Coast on a good note, simply because a couple of those places have just been houses of horrors for the Tigers. Specifically, them going into Anaheim has never, ever, not in my recollection has that been something that's gone well for the Tigers since I've been covering them. It really is something where they're going to have to hope that they don't get beat up on while they're out there, and maybe they just kind of, you know, as they've been doing for the last little while without, you know, some of their injured guys, hope that they kind of tread water on that West Coast trip. So, yeah, it's certainly, you might as well make hay while you get the chance before they go, you know, and get one, or if they could even get two out of these next couple with the Indians, that'd probably be asking too much. But it certainly would be nice for them to go on that West Coast trip with a good feeling. And certainly, I think Tigers fans would be appreciative of that.
Matt, we so enjoyed the time and the insight. Enjoy the game and all the festivities and all that tonight. And we'll definitely catch up with you down the line. Thanks so very much.
Sounds good, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
That is Matt Mowry, Tigers writer for the Oakland Press. He's at Comerica Park. Brad Ausmus, as he usually does when they're at home, should be speaking to those members of the media here in about 20, 25 minutes or so. Game 3 of 4 tonight, Indians-Tigers at Comerica Park. And so far in 2017, it's all coming up Tigers. They are 4-1 in the 5 games played so far. 2 more to go in this series tonight. Carlos Carrasco, the Indians, against Matt Boyd. And then tomorrow, it will be one of those afternoon getaway game days. So plenty of time, of course, left, but it's definitely a good start for from the Tigers' point of view against the Indians. All right, we got to take a quick time out here on this edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Cushlin, Frank Gargano, we're hanging out today in place of Bob France. He's out on assignment. He'll be back in the big chair, of course, coming up tomorrow. We're going to get a little Game 2 Cavs-Raptors preview from our good buddy Dave Zavak, FearTheSword.com, Cavs side on SB Nation. That'll be at about 4:35, but for about the next 60 minutes or so, open phone lines at 866-240-1065. You got thoughts on Indians Tigers? Love to hear them. You got lingering thoughts on the draft? Hey, I'm always pretty cool about that. Any topic, usually fair game. But I'm certainly going to get into three that have piqued my interest today. One, what Isaiah Thomas did for the Celtics last night in a series where I thought Washington was the better team and was going to end up winning. But I got lots of thoughts on that as Celtics are up 2-0 as Isaiah Thomas drops 53 with all the emotion and everything going on around it. Tyronn Lue saying coaching the Cavs is the toughest job in the NBA. I get what you're trying to say there, Ty Lue, but yeah, not so much. I got thoughts on that. And definitely want to get into the continued drama of Red Sox v. Orioles. And no, I'm not talking this time about what we talked about yesterday, which is Adam Jones and the racial comments being thrown at him from Boston fans and things thrown at him. No, these are about those unwritten baseball rules. And, well, you heard in the montage at the start of the show, Manny Machado going off on it in a clip that I think had more bleeps than words you can actually play over these airways. So we're going to get into all that and more. Talk with Dave Zavac on Cavs Raptors coming up at 4:35. All that and more straight ahead. By the way, speaking of baseball, I got a couple more goodies here. It may be cool out there right now, and I know rain's in the forecast the next couple days, but despite all that, you want to go see some baseball? Well, I got your chance right here. Final two pair of tickets to the Mudheads Fifth Third Field this Friday night take on Louisville. That's, of course, an evening game. I got two pairs left. So callers 5 and 6 right now at 866-240-1065. We will hook you up with a pair of Mudheads tickets and send you to Fifth Third Field coming up on Friday. Your phone calls at everything and anything and everything next on this Wednesday edition of the Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Be part of the Extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob Frantz Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
You heard Mr. Big Voice. Be a part of the show. It is time for that right now at 866-240-1065. Open phones until about maybe 50 minutes or so from now. And then we'll welcome back into the program Dave Zavac of FearOfTheSword.com. Cavs Raptors game 2 from the queue later on tonight. A game we'll have for you is a whole bunch of ESPN radio NBA playoff coverage over the course of the playoffs. We're going to have every game of the East-West Finals and NBA Finals, obviously. Various semifinals, just like we did for the first round. And one of those is tonight. So the second that Mike Miller is done with his doubleheader tonight of Drive Time Face-Off, the hockey show, we're going to take you to the queue for the ESPN radio coverage. Mark Kesser and the rest on the call for that one starting at 7. That'll take you till about 10 o'clock post-game and all that good stuff. And then Bill Clark will be back on the airwaves a little later tonight for his brand-new show, Extra Innings, giving all sorts of things on baseball, majors, minors, high school, even the softball for the high schoolers as well. It's a fun little new idea of a show we had, and we put it on at 10 to 10:30 on the grounds. If you figure a three-hour game for a 7 o'clock start, that's about when the games would end. It's kind of like what they do in some of the bigger markets. Right after the flagship is done with their game coverage, it's always one of those college shows about what you just saw. Usually they do it for about an hour or two, but a great little idea. So Bill Clark, Extra Innings, a little bit later tonight, essentially right after Cavs-Raptors coverage, which we'll be able to squeeze in between all the shows. 866-240-1065. There's going to be a lot of hoops talk. Obviously, Cavs Raptors game 2, top of the hour when we head into hour number 2, especially in light of I got thoughts on Isaiah Thomas and what he did last night, and the fact that I'm already looking massively wrong. I'm the one who's been saying for over 2 weeks now that that Cavs blowing the number 1 seed, it's going to be completely irrelevant and inconsequential because they won't even get the Celtics. They'll get Washington. Well, the inspired play of one Isaiah Thomas, and it's Boston up 2-0. They have won 6 straight since they dropped those first two in the Bulls series. So maybe it really will be game 1 Cavs
Rondo
in
was
Boston.
Out.
I'm getting to that. I am getting to that.
Sorry,
which is,
I had to throw it out there.
You're throwing it out there? Then allow me to throw part of my tease. If it keeps going like this, I smell a repeat of the 2015 East Finals. Yeah. More details on that in a bit. Also, top of the hour, we're also going to talk about the kind of silly comments among tucked away in there that Tyronn Lue made the other day.
Don't even get me started.
The Cavs are the toughest coaching job in the NBA. Yeah, we're going to go point by point to why that's probably not correct. Is it the most drama-filled job in the NBA? That is quite certainly a very, very possible. Toughest, that's kind of stretching it. But I wanted to talk about something that's still going on. Well, not still. This is a similar, different subject. About what's been going on between the Red Sox and the Orioles. And we talked a lot yesterday about the racial comments that were being hurled by fans, as well as things as well, like bags of peanuts at Adam Jones and the response to that. That's not necessarily what that's about. This is about. But if you got thoughts on that, that's fine too at 866-240-1065. There's another story going on with Red Sox v. Orioles, and it's the old baseball rules of throwing it, guys, and vengeance, and all the rest. And, well, Manny Machado is the guy at the forefront of this, the Orioles star, third baseman. And, well, he spoke yesterday after the game about Chris Sale throwing behind him and all the other stuff. And, well, let's just hear it from the horse's mouth himself. This is Manny Machado, and please excuse the fact that, well, a majority of what you're going to hear is actually bleeps because he was that upset about the whole thing. But if you haven't heard this one yet, give this a listen.
Go ahead. Hit me. No, don't let the keep lingering around and, you know, keep trying to hit people. I mean, it's MLB should do something about hit pitchers out there with balls in their hands, throwing 100 miles per hour, trying to hit people. I got a bat, too. I could go up there and crush somebody if I wanted to. But you know what? I'll get suspended for the year, and the pitchers only get suspended for two games. That's not cool. I mean, that's not my call. I mean, I play baseball. That's all I can control. So, you know, so they got to do something about it. You're going to hit somebody, go ahead, hit them. I don't know. I mean, go ask them. Go ask for. Well, actually, that side on the other side. I don't know. I mean, for me, as I see it, is that I slid into second base normal, and then I, you know, kind of hurt someone a little bit, you know, unintentional. I grabbed them after the matter of fact, and you know, they're still trying to pay the piper. I don't know what they're trying to pay for. I don't know what their mindset is. So whatever. I'm just gonna keep playing baseball, doing what I gotta do, keep winning games out here, keep playing for my team, and that's all I can control.
Okay, there's obviously a whole bunch there, in addition to the obvious frustrating bleeps. The first of which is, this is one of those old baseball rule things. And as Manny Machado pointed out, this fracas started when he slid into Dustin Pedroia. I don't even think that was this series. I think that was the last time they played. Because these are division rivals. So like the Tigers and Indians, they see each other a whole bunch of times over the course of the season. So that started last time. And it was, you know, some of the Red Sox were saying, oh, he was spiking him, which guys used to do in the olden days. Like Ty Cobb
I was going to say Ty Cobb.
Was infamous for spiking people, coming in cleat high, spikes high, just to tear open somebody's leg. He was notorious for that 100 years ago. And for obvious reasons, because it's so old in terms of baseball operation, that it's one of those things that gets put into the unwritten baseball rules of how does a team respond? And, well, how do we know how a team responds? They throw at the guy in question. The problem is, in this case, Boston keeps throwing at Manny Machado. They just keep doing it. Like, this is three separate times, including last night. And, by the way, later in the game afterwards, Machado did what? Homer off of Chris Sale, because, of course, they've tried to throw at him three times. Now, I will say they're not throwing at his head. They're throwing behind him, but kind of aiming for the butt, basically. So I'll at least give Chris Sale and the Red Sox mini partial credit that they're not throwing truly at the head. But they're still trying to hit guys. And I can't stand, by the by, throwing behind a guy. It just gets everybody all riled up. And I'm not suggesting actually throw and hit the guy in the head. That'd be ludicrous. But if you're going to throw it waist high with the whole message of vengeance being sent, then don't throw it behind him. Just hit in the flabby part of the butt. Everybody will get the messages. But is this going too far in keep throwing at him? Because they tried to throw at Machado three separate times since he spiked Dustin Pedroia. And you heard Machado mentioning in that clip that he said, I wasn't doing that intentionally. They took it the wrong way. You'll have to ask them, you know, why they want to keep doing this. But especially with the Adam Jones thing from just the other day, and then all this, these are division rivals. I mean, are we already in a state that for the rest of the year when Baltimore v. Boston is on the schedule, the umpires have to issue warnings before the first pitch? It feels like it.
Yeah. Push, it's the baseball culture. It's you can't celebrate a home run because then they're going to be throwing at you. I mean, Manny Machado raises such a good point when he says we have guys out here on the mound that can just wind up and throw a 100-mile-per-hour heater. They could throw it. Jacoby Jones got hit in the head. It wasn't intentional, but
right.
That is a risk going stepping into that batter's box. And when you know going in, for Manny Machado to step into that batter's box and know every time, there's a good chance this team is going to throw at me.
Right.
It's absolutely ridiculous. Something needs to be done about it. It's time to get over it. It really is. It's the fact that this is keeps going on, and I know a lot of – the thing is a lot of baseball purists love – oh, yeah, it's – you know, that's how things get settled in this sport. No, something needs to be done.
For me, as I just said – because I guess I sort of on this conversation fall into a little of that older school category. But what I can't stand is the two things that sometimes happen in these situations. One of which we're seeing in this Manny Machado thing. The other, thankfully, we're not, which is either throwing intentionally at the head or throwing behind a guy, which is what we're, the latter is what we're seeing in this situation. The reason I can't stand the throwing behind, everybody knows the intent. You didn't actually hit him. All you're doing is basically you're pouring gasoline on the fire. These guys, in a twist of way, to me, when I look at this situation, for example, believe it or not, the middle ground should be the Bob Gibson approach. Bob Gibson, if he wanted to hit you, he hit you. He did not play games. He did not throw at your head, and he did not throw behind you. If he wanted to hit you, you got plunked, though. End of story. And I just think it'd be better if Sale had just, like for yesterday, for example, and the third time now it's happened since the spiking thing in the last series. Third time somebody's thrown behind him. Yeah, I'd be pretty upset if I was Machado as well. Just hit me, get it over with. But they're not getting it over with. And throwing behind a guy without actually hitting him, I actually think kind of fans it and makes it worse instead of just getting the plunking over with.
But what's solved from here? Either way, some guy is getting a heater thrown at him. So you'd rather the guy just get hit.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. Especially as long as the guy's not throwing at his head. And the only credit I'm giving Chris Sale here is he wasn't throwing at his head. All those pitches and all the Boston ones in the other couple instances, they were all about waist high but behind him. They didn't actually hit him. And all that does is actually – basically what I'm saying is I get the vibe that players are more upset if you throw behind him rather than just plunking him in the butt.
Baseball culture, man. It's really weird. So here's my question to you. Do you think there should be a tougher penalty on pitchers that intentionally throw at batters?
Yes. I hate the warnings. Throw them out right away.
Yep.
No warnings. Right after that ball went behind Machado
yesterday.
You knew
what he was doing.
First thing the umpire did was doing the pointing to the dugouts. No. Come on, Blue. Everybody knows what's going on. You have to throw out Chris Sale in that situation. I'm sorry, you do. Chris Sale took it upon himself with the Red Sox as their best pitcher to go out and be the one that throws the quote-unquote beanball at Machado. Everyone knew what he was doing. Where are we with these teams, apparently, this season, especially when you add the Adam Jones thing story to the top of this whole iceberg? Like, warnings are almost automatic for the rest of the way.
Right.
You shouldn't get the warning. You blatantly throw behind somebody. And this is another reason why I think throwing behind is actually worse than just plunking them in the butt. Because throwing behind, everybody knows what you're doing when you throw it behind the guy.
Uh-huh.
And all you're doing is fanning the situations. And by warning them, I think nobody learns an actual lesson. Chris Sale should have been thrown out of the game immediately, as is any pitcher in that situation. And one wrong move by the batter getting thrown at, one wrong move in that sequence, and he gets thrown out too.
Right.
No more warnings. Immediate ejections and fines is what needs to happen. If, like you want to really curb this, then that's the only way. The warnings have got to go. You see something blatant like that, they should just get thrown out immediately.
Right.
That's me anyway.
What you're telling the Red Sox is, all right, here's your one for the game.
Here's your one. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Throw out that long reliever that won't pitch again in a week. Have him plunk the guy and get thrown out because we only gave you the warning. Wink, wink.
And if you're the Orioles, and what this happens most times, what are you thinking?
Oh, you want
to play this game? Okay.
I'll send up
all
my
right.
same reliever later in this game. You know, I heard somebody, I don't even remember what show it was, but I was listening to it on the way in. It wasn't Russillo either. And basically, the one guy's opinion was, if I'm Baltimore, I'm throwing at Dustin Pedroia tonight.
Yeah. And then probably, we get to see both benches just clear.
Exactly. I think that's a good 65-70% chance, likely, that Dustin Pedroia is going to get thrown at tonight. Why Pedroia? Because he's the guy Machado allegedly spiked that started this whole thing. That was 3 weeks ago, last time these two teams met.
And I'm actually kind of going with what you're saying, Jim. I wasn't sure about it at first, but yeah, if you're going to throw at him, just hit him. Look at, and I know I always I have to be the guy that circles back to hockey. You know, for everyone wondering why hockey players are allowed to duke it out on the ice.
Because it gets this kind of stuff.
It gets
it over everybody. They get their 5-minute major penalties.
Nobody's
if it was bad enough, maybe somebody gets a suspension. But there's no more vengeance that needs to happen. You're absolutely right. That's why in hockey they let the fights
just
go.
Just let it go.
Plus, we all fans, we admit it, guys. Y'all love to see that, too. We're overdue, by the way. We got to get a quick timeout, top of the hour. On the other side, we're gonna kind of switch a little gears to some basketball, because, boy, do I have thoughts on what I saw last night from Isaiah Thomas. Tyronn Lue saying he has the toughest coaching job, and that's going to lead into talking to Dave Zabak, fearofthesword.com, at the bottom of next hour. Cavs-Raptors game 2 tonight, a game you'll hear on the ticket, by the way. Soon as Face-Off the Hockey Show with Mike Miller is done at 7, we'll go right to the tip-off of that one, and that'll pretty much bridge you all the way until extra innings with Bill Clark tonight here at 10. We can also take calls on this subject if you got thoughts on it too for the next half hour or so. But quick timeout for top of the hour. Switch into some hoops on the other side.
Thomas, the Euro Stephon Smith, Isaiah Thomas going against a 7-footer. Thomas, lob it up. Horford off the delivery by Isaiah Thomas. Horford the throwdown. And the Celtics are storming back. Tracked down by Horford. Isaiah Thomas! It's a three! Thomas. It's a three! Isaiah Thomas loves that corner. Wall got picked. Thomas to the hoop. It's good! And a foul! Gets a step on Wall. Morris there to greet him. Thomas with the flip. Isaiah Thomas. 46 points. Isaiah Thomas to the hole! Isaiah Thomas is a machine! Thomas. Crosses, foul called, and one! Thomas, it goes! Caps off a remarkable night for Isaiah Thomas. 53 points, and Boston has run away with it.
Yesterday was a long 6 hours. Even today, I had to go back about 4 to 5 hours a day. And today, my mouth was swollen this morning. I had to go back to the hospital just to get a few meds to get the swelling down, because I could barely talk. I know once game time came, my guys would get me going and give me the energy to go out there and try to win a game. It was a team effort tonight, because there was times where you would think the game would be over, and they had the momentum, but we kept going. Today is my sister's birthday. She would have been 23 today. So the least I can do is go out there and play for her.
In the air, left field. Brantley going back to the track, to the wall. It is gone! A two-run shot for Miguel Cabrera, fresh off the disabled list, and the Tigers add to their lead.
Miguel Cabrera is amazing. Look at Miguel pull his hands inside in front of his body. I mean, that's freaky kind of stuff right there.
The 2-2. Popped him up. Who wants it? Castellanos. And the Tigers win the first two.
Feel different when you end the year. I mean, I'm glad I'm back. Hopefully, can stay healthy the rest of the season. I'm trying to help the team to win more games.
I mean, it's a good win. Any win against a division rival, especially these guys who beat up on us pretty good last year, you know, it feels good. After the game, it feels good. But we all know, you know, it's a long way. You know, we got to turn the page quickly and come back tomorrow ready to win.
Go ahead. Hit me. No, don't let the keep lingering around and, you know, keep trying to hit people. I mean, it's MLB should do something about hitting pitchers out there with balls in their hands, throwing 100 miles per hour, trying to hit people. I got a bat, too. I could go up there and crush somebody if I wanted to. But you know what? I'll get suspended for the year, and the pitchers only get suspended for 2 games. That's not cool. I mean, that's not my call. I mean, I play baseball. That's all I can control. So, You know, so they got to do something about it. You're going to hit somebody, go ahead, hit them. I don't know. I mean, go ask them. Go ask Farrell. Go ask that side on the other side. I don't know. I mean, for me, as I see it, is that I slid into second base normal, and then I, you know, kind of hurt someone a little bit, you know, unintentional. I grabbed them after the matter of fact, and, you know, they're still trying to pay the piper. I don't know what they're trying to pay for. I don't know what their mindset is. So, whatever. I'm just going to keep playing baseball, doing what I got to do, keep winning games out here, keep playing for my team, and that's all I can control.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
You know, there is one part of talking at the end of last hour. Welcome back into the Extravaganza, hour number two here on this Wednesday. Jim Kushlin, Frank Gargano hanging out with you today. Bob France out on assignment. He'll be back in the big chair, by the way, tomorrow. But, you know, it occurs to me, the one thing, talking about this last segment with Manny Machado, those bleeps you just heard, he's right about one thing, and this has always been a problem, and every time one of these incidents comes back up, I at least feel the need to throw this out there. I can't stand Major League Baseball's suspension rules in terms of games. Makes sense for position players, they make sense for bullpen guys, but they do not make sense for starting pitchers. Because usually in situations like these, if there is a suspension, the starting pitcher would get like a 5-game suspension or a 6 or 7. Whatever it is, since he's a starter, it only amounts to missing a start. Like Corey Kluber may because of his tweaked back, for example. Two totally unrelated things, but both could play out the same way, i.e. missing one start. I have always believed for a long time, if you're baseball and you dole out suspensions, whether you're a starting pitcher or somebody else on the roster does matter. If you're a starting pitcher, your suspension, if you've done something that deems a suspension for Major League Baseball, and you're a starting pitcher, I believe your suspension should be minimum 15 games. Minimum. Why? You want to make it an actual punishment. Missing two starts, at least, it would be better in terms of doling out punishment than it is right now. When you suspend a starting pitcher, but for 5 or 6 or 7 games, they only miss one start. That's not, you know, it's one thing, you know, you have your position player, your starting third baseman out for a week on a suspension. That hurts you. That's a punishment that's felt. A reliever who, you know, you never know how many games in a week they might pitch. They might pitch 3 or 4. They might pitch 1. But since you never know, that's fine, too. But for a starting pitcher, the suspensions has to be longer. It's why, because in baseball, you have these demarcation lines. You know, rookie status is 130 at-bats for any hitter. Rookie status for a pitcher is 50 innings. And in some fantasy leagues, by the by, like my AL-only one that I'm in, there's two different versions for pitchers. If you're a starter, it's actually the 50 innings, because if you're a starter, you'll get that in about 6 or 7 starts. If you're a reliever, it's 30 appearances. Hitters, either way, it's 130 at-bats. So right there, there's already a demarcation line to determine if you're a rookie status or not.
Right.
I know that doesn't have much to do with suspensions. It's just to illustrate that the calendar works different if you're a starting pitcher versus anyone else on the roster. So just a little, last little tag on that. Of course, you have thoughts on that, 866-240-1065. But yeah, that's just my little tag on that. Every time one of these comes up, I have to throw back out there that Major League Baseball is always dumb, even though I don't think, as of right now, there's no suspensions looming out of any of this stuff between Machado, Baltimore, and the Red Sox, and Chris Sale, and the rest. But man, when it happens again, and it will, starting pitchers' suspensions need to be 15 games so they actually miss multiple starts. That's just me.
Boom. Mic drop.
Okay. 866-240-1065. Do want to switch to some basketball because there are two topics that I definitely wanted to touch on, especially before we bring in Dave Zabak, bottom of this hour, talk Cavs, Raptors, game 2. Probably ask him a couple of these NBA questions, too. One is a silly one. In fact, let's get the silly one out of the way first. So Tyronn Lue the other day said that, you know, coaching the Cavs is the toughest job in the NBA. Really, dude? Really? Okay, no. See, I'm sorry, Ty Lue. You're wrong. I think coaching the Sacramento Kings, who just, you know, got rid of their best player at the deadline, that's a worse situation. a tougher, not a worse, but tougher situation. I would say, coach, especially given the current state of the respective franchises, coaching the Lakers and Knicks is tougher than coaching the Cavs. Now, the one thing they're coaching the Cavs may actually be at the top of the list of is most drama-filled coaching position in the NBA. Yeah, right now that might go to the Cavs because of all their little drama they seem to love to do each season since LeBron's come back. But to suggest that it's the toughest job in the NBA, that's silly. And you know, to me, what proves it? Because, you know, the biggest reason I, as a Cavs fan, Frank, Jim Kusa, Frank Vergata, yes, by the way, yes, here with you today, why I have no problem with Lou's coaching job at all, because the one thing he could truly have a direct impact on, for what it's worth, last year and this year, he's been tip of the cap brilliant on, and that's out-of-bounds plays after a timeout. No matter what happens, much more often than not, Ty Lue's out of timeout, out of bounds plays always seem to be pulled off perfectly.
Agreed.
Outside of that, though, you're managing the talent and the drama. Really?
Did he?
Not like trying to coach the triangle in New York with a decent young guy in Porzingis, a whole bunch of nothing, and whatever the hell Melo's doing.
Diva extraordinaire.
That's a tougher day in, day out job.
Did Lou say specifically why his job is so tough?
I'm going to look up exactly why as we think more and more
about
this.
As I'm thinking, before I know I already laughed at him, but I'm trying to think. As somebody that has to manage the locker room, yes, I would probably argue that would be the hardest, second hardest locker room to deal with. Number one, maybe being New York, as you pointed out.
Oh, with the Knicks, just because of the circus that they can't stop being.
That's the thing when you have a bunch of superstars, especially in the National Basketball Association, a lot of egos in that locker room that you've got to deal with, a lot of superstars. You have the superstar of the NBA to deal with, who already thinks he can do your job way better than you.
Right.
But here's the deal with coaching in any sport when it comes to professional level. As long as you're winning, everything is fine and dandy. Nothing's wrong. Money's being made. You're winning.
Except when you don't have the ear. The only thing that can get in the way of that scenario, because we saw it play out last year, is if you can't have the ear of your players, no amount of winning will save you.
Right.
See David Black.
Well, so the hardest part of being the Cavs coach is gaining the respect of LeBron James.
Basically.
That is the hardest part of that job.
Right. I agree. Because that's why I give Ty Lue a whole bunch of passes. Because the one thing he can have a direct impact on is drawing up those out-of-bounds plays right after a timeout. And to his credit, since he took over regular season last year, certainly in last year's playoffs, I could definitely remember one against Detroit, that was, I think it was game 3 at the Palace. It was just brilliant. Delly's under the hoop, snags it, like, across the baseline. This is out of bounds, under the hoop after timeout, with, 1.5 seconds on the shot clock. Skips it across, in the air, but around the baseline to Kyrie Irving in the corner of corners, who drains it.
Right.
That was a Ty Lue drawn up play. As long as he does those things right, there's not much else, he can do. He's just kind of there because the players run that show.
Yeah, dude, you're winning. You're probably going to get to the finals again.
Unlike the previous coach, you clearly do have the ear of your players, so you're not going to get fired because you don't get along with them. No matter if you had an Eastern Conference title and then were 30-11 the way Black was when he was fired.
Here's what I'd love to ask Ty Lue. Ask any other coach. I guarantee you many in the NBA would go, oh, I'll take that job. Are you kidding me?
Can we make that trade right now?
I'll tell you right now, Fred Hoiberg in Chicago would take that trade in a heartbeat.
I think he would. 866-240-1065. Well, let's get Dan and Napoleon up here on the program with us. What's going on, Dan? How you doing?
Good, Jim. How you doing?
I can't complain. What's on your mind today?
All right, on the suspension thing.
Yes.
The only way I see that making sense for a starting pitcher, and I don't know if it happens or not, is if the starters get docked, or anybody who gets suspended, Are they docked pay while they're on suspension? That's the only way that would make sense.
That's a good question, because I know that seems to vary in sports. For example, in the NFL, you don't play because of suspension. You don't get no game check. I'm not 100% sure if that works the same in baseball. That's a good question, Dan. I'll look that one up for you.
That would make sense, though, if you suspend your starting pitcher for five games and you suspend the DH for five games. Well, you know, they're both suspended for five games, and so they're both docked 5 games worth of pay.
Right, right. Yeah, that may be the way, if that's the case, and I don't think it is because I don't recall it ever coming up. But like I said, I'll double-check that for you because that's a good question. I know the NFL does that when a player's suspended. If a player's suspended, they don't get their game check for the game they were suspended for. I don't think that works that way in baseball, but I will check for you because, you know, assuming that there is no docked pay for a suspension, that's why I come out on the side of you got to suspend starting pitchers longer because their suspension is a joke if they're only missing the one start, even though the suspension says 5 or 6 or 7 or whatever games. You have
agreed.
To make the, if there's no pay that gets taken if you're suspended, and I don't think there is, but we'll double check that for you. Then that's why, to me, a 5 or 6 or 7 game suspension for a starting pitcher is basically worthless. That's why if there is no docking pay, I'm of the mind you got to make it 15 days so they at least miss 2 starts.
Agreed.
Thanks for checking in. Good question. And that is a very good question because I really don't know honest to goodness, the answer to that. We'll try to look that up for you as we go along because that is a darn good question. Like I said, I know the NFL does that, but Major League Baseball, you know, not so sure. 866-240-1065. We're going to be talking about more basketball, by the way, here in about 10, 15 minutes. Dave Zavak, FearOfTheSword.com. Cavs, Raptors, Game 2 tonight. There was a Game 2 yesterday that I do want to talk about. The Celtics over the Wizards in overtime, they now have a 2-0 series lead. They have won 6 straight, has Boston, since they went down 0-2 to the Bulls in Round 1. Then Rondo goes down hurt. Then the whole thing with Isaiah Thomas's sister. Then he gets the tooth knocked out in game one. And he goes off for, what was it, 53?
I think it was 52.
I think it was 53. 53.
Huh.
53, 4-4. He was 18 to 33. And this was the second game in a row, incidentally, in this series where the Wizards were up big early, blew the whole lead, and eventually lost the game by double digits. Boston outscored the Wizards by 10 in the overtime, and Bradley Beal had a last-second shot in regulation that could have won it, and he bricked it. I've already had to change my whole opinion on this series, because before the series started, heck, you guys heard me alluding to this in the first round when we were previewing the first-round matchups, that I said, yeah, you know that Cavs screwing around and all the rest and losing the number one seed? Yeah, it's going to be all irrelevant when the time comes anyway, because I think they'll get Washington in the conference finals and therefore have home court.
Yeah, you did say that.
I have been saying that since the first round. After seeing 2 games, I got to change my opinion on that. I think Boston is actually going to win this series, and that's just crazy. So now that will come to back to bite the Cavs. They'll have to open up in Boston. But one real random quip I have with what we've seen in 2 games is it doesn't matter whether it was on ESPN, CBS, Fox. It doesn't matter. I can't tell you how many previews of the Washington-Boston series I read. So this would have been back over the weekend, where at one point in the preview, the writer would allude to the following. Well, there is one advantage the Washington Wizards have. They have the best player in the series in John Wall. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Pump the brakes. This is no knock against John Wall. But all these guys were dead serious in what they were writing. They actually believed John Wall, coming into the series, was a better player than Isaiah Thomas. I thought it was a ludicrous position when I read it, say, on Saturday. And it's even more ludicrous on Wednesday after what Isaiah Thomas just did.
I was going to say.
The first time I read that from the first writer, my first thought in my head was, no, you're wrong there. Isaiah Thomas is the best player in that series. Again, no knock on John Wall. He's had a pretty good season. He had 40 points. Masked in all the Isaiah Thomas talk today.
Great player.
John Wall had 40 points, and, you know, his team had a chance to win the entire game. They were up big early, blew it, went to overtime, had a last-second shot that could have won it in regulation, went to overtime and lost. But at the same time, though, Frank, and you being a Chicago guy, could probably attest to what I'm about to say here. Mm-hmm. I still have no faith whatsoever in these Celtics. Because I'm sitting here two games into their conference semifinals while they have a 2-0 lead on Washington, who I thought would be better than them and would beat them in the series, and I now no longer think that. Are we really watching a Celtics team that has just been taking advantage of the fact that Rondo went down in round one? Because I still can't get past the fact that Rondo looked like old Rondo in games one and two. It clearly messed with the Celtics, and they dropped the first two at home. I can't get past that. Because I look at that and I say, okay, even if Boston wins, you know what I see? Replay of the 2015 East Finals where the Hawks had home court over the Cavs, so it started in Atlanta, and the Cavs just mopped the floor with them in four. Because if Rajon Rondo is the key to messing up the Celtics, then the Cavs will blow the doors off these guys next round. Especially if game one against Toronto is any indication, and I unlike, say, Bob, think it kind of is, being that that's their most complete game, not counting the Celtics' early April game, in 2 months that that team has played. And I think they have the right mindset again. I still think this is going to be a five, maybe six games top series with the Raptors, and then it's on to Boston. And if Boston had that trouble in round one with Rondo, because I still can't get past that, then what the heck are they going to do if LeBron, Kyrie, and Love are hitting all over the place and then throw in a Kyle Korver or something? Yeah, Isaiah Thomas could go off for 53 again, but then the Cavs will win 105-100 or something.
Here, if Rondo would have stayed healthy, I do believe the Bulls would have won the
series. Watching that piece of that whole series, I firmly
Rondo
believe that.
Rondo looked phenomenal. Like you said, old Rondo was out.
He looked like 2008 Rondo, and it clearly messed with the Celtics.
D-Wade was back, hitting buckets. Jimmy Butler was doing his thing. The Bulls weren't a scrub team. It was just very dysfunctional. We hadn't seen their true potential.
That's why they went 41-41.
You know, we're talking about Big Mo. Momentum was on the Bulls' side. To go into Boston and take two games.
The way they did in those first two.
They had Boston's number. They were down and out.
And then the thing with his sister happens combined with Rondo's injury, and it flipped the whole script.
We've seen it in the playoffs so many times through many different sports. Sometimes all you need is a little spark. You're not sure where it's going to come from, but they got the spark with Rondo being out. The Bulls crumbled, and here they're on a roll now.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go ahead and say that the Cavs are just going to destroy them. Because
I'll do it for you. Cavs will destroy the
absolutely
Boston Celtics.
Not. I don't think this is any reason to just forget. Again, the Cavs played one complete game. So what, we're just going to abandon everything we've seen from the Cavaliers' defense so far?
Personally,
they played
I've always liked the personnel on paper with Toronto more than Boston. On the grounds that Toronto has two guys and Boston has one.
But Boston was still the number one team in the East. Yes, they showed
because
a sign
of... Because the Cavs jerked around for 3 months, defensively and resting guys.
Exactly. So you can't just acknowledge that the fact that maybe the Cavs' defense isn't very good. Playing back into that they were just bored. If the Cavaliers ever lose, they were just bored.
In the regular season, sadly, that is proven to be true.
Here's what I'll say. I think the Cavs will win the series if Boston should come out of this series.
Which I think they will now.
But I don't think it's going to be a sweep. And I don't think it's going to be as clean cut as you think it's going to be.
Fair enough. We will agree to disagree on that one. Hey, we got to hit a quick timeout here on this edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Kushlin, Frank Gargano, we're in for Bob France. He's out on assignment today. Coming up next, by the way, top of the hour, the doubleheader, Mike Miller on Drive Time and on Face Off, the hockey show. That'll take you from 5 until 7. And then, by the way, speaking of basketball, we'll then at that point go to Cavs-Raptors Game 2 here on the ticket. So lots of fun stuff coming up, and we're going to preview that Game 2 Cavs-Raptors. It's at the Q tonight. Dave Zabak, FearOfTheSword.com, joins us next on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Back we are here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Final segment here of this edition of the Extravaganza. Jim Cushlin, Frank Gargano hanging out with you on this Wednesday. Bob out on assignment. He'll be back in the big chair coming up tomorrow. Of course, stick around after us. The doubleheader, Mike Miller, he's at Selena Tam O'Shanter for first drive time, then face off the hockey show. That'll take you right up to tip off. Game two tonight at the Q. Cavs, Raptors. Cavs leading this one 1-0. It ended... it ended as an 11-point game, but it was way, way more than that in what I consider the most solid game the Cavaliers have played in a couple of months, playoffs or regular season. The only one that maybe it's equal was that early April game that the Cavs went into Boston with, in theory, number one still all on the line, and they just whooped up on the Celtics that night. This was easily the other most complete game they played. So game two coming up tonight from the Q, and to get a little preview of it and all things Cavs and NBA playoffs, we welcome back good friend of the show. He writes for FearOfTheSword.com, Cavs site over there on SB Nation. Dave Zabak back on the program with us. Let's go. What's going on, Dave? How you doing?
Hey, doing pretty good. Excited for tonight.
Yeah, and one should be. And your thoughts on that? Was what we saw on Monday, counting or not counting that early April game against Boston, was that the most solid game the Cavs have played in a couple months?
Yeah, and it was clear that they sort of had a defensive game plan and stuck with it and got results, and it helped them get out in transition. And the things that you kind of questioned coming to the playoffs were, they had kind of indicated that they had, these defensive strategies that they were holding back. And you felt like you saw that a little bit on Monday night. And then they consistently, David Griffin, Ty Lue, will say, the team is best when they play with pace. And, they did both of those things on Monday night. So I just think, they played with a ton of energy on both ends. They got the ball up the court quickly, and they got great looks really, really all game.
Were you encouraged to see that too, especially early on? Because I know I was. The one thing everybody always fears in those situations where, in the Cavs situation, they hadn't played in 8 days because they had to wait for the other series to get done. There's always that sluggish out of the gate possibility. We certainly did not see that on Monday night, and to me that was the most encouraging thing about game one, was that they just came right out with the energy and dictated the pace of that game right from the start. And a lot of times, not necessarily just the Cavs, but a lot of teams over the years, we've seen them with the long layoff be sluggish in that opener. To me, that was the most encouraging sign of all of the things that went right for the Cavs in game one.
Yeah, there was no question. I think part of that was just the game plan that they had set up. I think one can sort of lead to the other. If you have a game plan that's asking you to trap ball handlers, you're being asked from the get-go to sort of play with an intensity level that, is a little bit different. And nobody loves that sort of free safety role defensively than LeBron. So when he knows that, Tristan and Kyrie are going to be trapping up top, he knows he's going to have some opportunities to, come in and maybe pick off some of those passes that are coming out of those traps. So, I think LeBron gets excited about that game plan. It plays into Tristan's strength. I don't know that it necessarily plays into Kevin Love's strength, but they're sort of maximizing some guys' skill set. And in terms of a guy like Kyrie, he's not going to argue either, because it means he's getting help when it comes to dealing with Kyle Lowry.
We're talking with Dave Zabak, FearOfTheSword.com. That's Cavs site over on SB Nation. We're previewing game two of the Cavs Raptor series from the Q tonight. We'll have the coverage of it for you joining at 7 right after face off the hockey show for the tip off of this one. And one thing we were debating yesterday, Dave, was that, because I'm in the position where I think the Cavs are going to end up up 2-0. For whatever reason, at least in Cleveland, the Raptors have no answers, and they've been getting drubbed time and again, dating back to last year in the games in Cleveland. But there was some debate we had on the program yesterday that some of the things that the Cavs were able to do in game one, highlighted by the off the backboard alley-oop in the first quarter to LeBron pretending to take that swig of beer late in the game, that they crossed a little bit over into a little bit of clowning the Raptors territory, and that that might be dangerous for this game on the grounds that they're going to be legitimately very mad. Do you see any of that possibly playing out? And do you think the Cavs were clowning them a little bit in that game one?
I do. I had an interview with David Griffin, the Cavs GM, last week, and, he said himself, he never has any idea game to game what team he's going to get. And he also sort of said, it's a team that, really almost needs to have its back against the wall, which one of the weirdest sort of talking points about the Cavs over the last couple of years. If you remember, this time last year, people thought that the Cavs were a front-running team, that that they needed to have, sort of a big lead because they weren't sort of mentally tough enough to come back.
I do remember some of that.
It's in reality, it's the exact opposite, where they get bored very easily, and they can reach such sort of high levels of basketball. And I think that is a problem, that they don't always respect their opponents to the level that they maybe should. And, I think they assume that teams will quit when they don't necessarily quit. There, were times against the Pacers where they'd have big leads and they'd sort of let the Raptors come back. So I do think that they get full of themselves, and it's just a matter of they're not going to learn the lesson that it's a problem until they actually lose. And, frankly, they just haven't lost, a game that matters in a long time. Like you said, you mentioned the Boston game. I think the closest thing to two games that maybe were close to must win over the course of the regular season were that Boston game and then the Christmas Day game. I mean, even when they played the Warriors the second time on Martin Luther King Day, they had already won on Christmas and sort of had that in their back pocket. So, it wouldn't totally surprise me if they sort of counted their chickens before they hatched tonight and didn't come out. That being said, they certainly feel really comfortable with where they're at.
And that feels to me like it would be a defensive effort kind of thing, because even though the final score from game one was an 11-point spread, the Cavs winning, they were up by as many as 20-something. And even though the score got closer at the end, it didn't have the same feel of some of the games in the Pacers series where they might have had big leads or leads, and then in the fourth quarter it became a ball game again. That didn't happen in game one, which is why I kind of am personally been letting it slide a little bit, that it ended up 11-point margin. But a lot of that was defensive effort. I mean, even though Toronto at the end of the day still had over 100 points, you felt that the Cavs were at a different level defensively through when it mattered, in that game one. And the fact that they only started, quote-unquote, blowing the lead when it truly was decided, that's why that game one was so encouraging to me, because they didn't let the lead slip away when it still mattered.
Yeah, and, I mean, I think it goes, you can go both ways with it. Even when the game was in doubt and the Raptors went on their run to start the second quarter,
Within two at one point before they blew it back out to 10.
Yeah, but even then, I don't think the Cavs would tell you they were worried, because I think like Kyle Korver missed two threes, Channing Frye missed a couple of threes. I mean, they were still getting the looks that they wanted. What I would say, and it goes to your point about the defense, the Cavs' defensive game plan was, we're going to really try and keep the ball out of Lowry's hands. And if we are letting DeMar DeRozan shoot, we want to keep him off the free throw line. And so you had DeMar Carroll, you had Patrick Patterson, and you had DeMar DeRozan with a lot of open three-point attempts. And, that's a good strategy, because those guys aren't great three-point shooters. They didn't really make any of them the other night. But the NBA, these are really good players. And It wouldn't, you know, completely shock me to see some of the, those guys actually hit some of those, and then maybe the Cavs need to adjust. So I agree with you. I thought defensively the Cavs were really good, but there is always the possibility that, you know, DeMar Carroll sort of bounces back and has a better game and some of their role players play better. Normally you wouldn't expect that until they get back to Toronto, though, so we'll see.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I'm certainly expecting that when we hit game three on Friday night in Toronto, whether this is 2-0 Cavs or 1-1. The question is just how ready are they going to be for this, you know, game two, or are we about to get a replay of game two from last year's East Finals? We're talking with Dave Zavac. He writes for fearlessorder.com. That's the Cavs site over on SB Nation. Game two, Cavs-Raptors from the Q tonight. We'll have that game for you. 7 o'clock, the tip-off time and coverage start time right after face-off the hockey show here on the Ticket. Some other little news and notes from the Cavs and maybe a question or two on some of these other NBA series. Got to start with, we had a quick little laugh about this maybe 30 minutes ago or so here on the program. The Tyronn Lue saying he has the toughest job, head coaching job in the NBA. And you know what, Ty Lue? And this is what I said basically, Dave. Ty Lue, I think you've done a decent job. You've been fantastic on one aspect where you really can have an impact. That's out of bounds after timeout plays. But really, come on, it's borderline laughable to say you have the toughest job, head coaching job in the NBA. Most drama-filled, yeah, that's especially, that's possible. Most expectations, yeah, but toughest, I could probably think of a few other jobs where their head coaches would gladly trade places right now with Ty Lue if they could.
Yeah, you know, it always goes back to, you know, LeBron James might not be the easiest coach, you know, or easiest player to coach, but nobody who's ever coached him has ended up, in a worse position, right? I mean,
that's
Mike
true.
Brown,
even David Blatt is coaching back where he feels most comfortable nowadays. That's in overseas.
Right. And you go back to David Blatt just in this vein of comments. Remember, David Blatt compared himself to a fighter pilot.
Right. I remember.
In terms of all of the challenges involved with being the Cavs coach. No, I mean, it's sort of obviously not true. But I think it does sort of speak to something about Ty Lue, which is that he's a pretty sensitive guy. I think he, reads a lot. I think he hears a lot. I think it makes him a good coach because I think he's, really in tune with sort of, where his players are at emotionally and sort of how to push and pull them. I think he, sort of emotionally is oftentimes on the same wavelength, as a lot of them. But he wears, his heart on his sleeve a lot. You know, you go back to games. So one of the sort of stories about game seven in the finals last year was, you know, the Cavs were down by 8 at halftime and Ty Lue is sort of laying into LeBron like, you know, dude, I know you're playing fine, but like we need you to be, you know, MVP super LeBron if we want to have any chance here. And LeBron kind of got mad about it at first. Like, why am I the one who's getting yelled at here? You know, I'm the reason why we're here and all that. But eventually it kind of sank into LeBron, sort of the urgency of the situation. So I think Ty gets sort of caught up in the moment a little bit. And, you know, does he have the hardest job? No. Does he have a hard job? Yes. And maybe perspective is always, you know, is always a little tough for all of us at times.
No doubt about that. Dave Zavac, fearlessorder.com, Cavs site on SB Nation, joining us here on the Extravaganza. Jim Cush and Frank Gargano, we're in for Bob here on this Wednesday edition as we're wrapping up. He'll be back in the big chair tomorrow. And, of course, coming up next, Mike Miller with the doubleheader from Sylvania Tam-O-Shanter. First drive time, then face off the hockey show. Then we'll get to that game two, Cavs and Raptors here on the Ticket. 7 o'clock, or just after 7 o'clock, the tip-off time. We'll join the coverage of that right before the tip-off at 7. So last question before I let you go, Dave. It's kind of a two-part question. Question one, what has to happen for the Cavs to be up 2-0? And the second part of that question is, if Toronto is going to tie this series 1-1 after tonight, what's going to have to happen on either front?
Well, I think I'll answer the first one and see where that, or the second one and see where that leaves us. But, you know, I think the big difference between what the Pacers did and what the, you know, Raptors did in game one the Pacers basically face guarded J.R. Smith. They face guarded Kyle Korver and basically gave LeBron and Kyrie the opportunity to play one-on-one and just see who would win. And I think the biggest reason why some of those games were close was that Kyrie Irving just didn't play very well. It wasn't that they did anything to sort of take Kyrie away. He just struggled. And the Raptors in game one kind of went the opposite tack and were sort of willing to take Kyrie out of the game. And even LeBron, you know, at various points of the game didn't have a huge role offensively, but they were giving up tons of shots and tons of open looks to other guys. And you saw Kyrie end up with 10 assists sort of because of it. If I'm the Raptors, I go back to making Kyrie beat you one-on-one because Kyle Lowry is one of the better defensive point guards in the game. I'd try and take away some of those open threes from some of the other guys and then, you know, throw a bunch of bodies at LeBron and just try and get Kyrie to play one-on-one. And you know, Kyrie's good enough that you could still lose, but I'd take that anyway. So the Cavs, for now, just need to basically keep executing the game plan.
Always a pleasure talking with you, Dave. Always love the insight. Enjoy the game tonight, and I'm sure we'll catch up with you again down the line.
Hey, sounds great.
That is Dave Zavac, writer for FearTheSword.com, Cavs site over on SB Nation. Game 2 slated for tonight. Cavs, Raptors from the queue. 7 o'clock, the coverage time right here on the ticket. Before that, it'll be Mike Miller with the doubleheader, Drive Time, Face Off, the hockey show from Sylvania Tam O'Shanter. He is coming up next. And then to cap off the entire evening later on, Extra Innings with Bill Clark after the Cavs game at about 10 o'clock, talking all things baseball. It is game 3 of 4 tonight between the Indians and the Tigers at Comerica Park. Tigers have taken the first 2 and 4 out of 5 from the Indians in 2017. After, of course, the Indians kind of blitzing them over the course of last season, 14-4. So that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Bob will be back in the big chair coming up tomorrow. Stick around, though. Mike Miller's doubleheader is up next.